All right, so I'd like you to start with a one-minute version, I'll be timing it, of why you should be mayor of San Francisco. Go.
Okay, so I am going to bring to the mayor's office three core values, which is sorely lacking here in San Francisco. The first thing is accountability. Second is law and order. Third is quality of life. And so using my experience in the private sector as a startup consultant and advisor where I've built coalitions, and helping people from all walks of life, all nationalities, religions, national origins, and local, to work together to, let's look at the three things, the accountability. We have been lacking accountability in City Hall, lacking accountability of all the department heads, lacking accountability by the nonprofit organizations, the homelessness outreach organizations. Money is being spent uncontrollably. Law and order also needs to be brought in, and I propose all different changes to ensure that we will change our quality of life once I get elected.
Thank you very much for that. And how would you describe the neighborhood where you live in San Francisco?
So where I am is on the west side. We are, my wife and I, we live in an apartment, so we are tenants, we're renters, on just north of Golden Gate Park. It is very much a suburban feeling. You know, we have a lot more single-family homes, a lot of bicyclists, but a lot of cars as well. And so it's not a crowded east side or downtown or parts of SoMa. And we love it. We enjoy it. In the evening when everyone is at home, you hardly hear anything except a few, you know, in the morning of birds here and there. But it is really, really very different from other parts of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I live out on the west side also. And yes. I like how it feels kind of retiring a little bit compared to the hustle and bustle of the rest. But I like that the rest of it is accessible. So as mayor, you would be presiding over all of this.
I want to get
into some of the issues right away. And the way we're going to be looking at this is through the beats that we cover in our news department, essentially.
Okay.
And we're going to start with energy and environment. So the first question here has to do with the environment. And there's been discussion lately about San Francisco's litter problem. I'm wondering if you have a plan to deal with San Francisco's litter problem.
So I see that in two different ways. First of all, actual litter, like people dropping small pieces of wrapper on the ground, that litter, versus dumping. Right, dumping you can catch by having cameras in specific areas, but that's an enforcement issue. And so that's a lot more difficult to get started. And those, you'd have fines, you'd go after the perpetrators, those who are dumping trucks or from trucks or furniture and mattresses. Those, there are certain parts of town that's a big problem. And we need to ensure that that doesn't become more and more of a trend. But in terms of neighborhood small trash on sidewalks, I had traveled to, I believe it was Portland, and I saw a couple of years ago these high-tech trash bins that were also compactors as well, freestanding with Wi-Fi communication. And so that way, as people use them and they get full, they will automatically compact. And once they get close to being actually full after they compacted all the trash, they then signal to the to a coordinator or sanitation department to say, we're full, ready to come pick us up. Because the problems in the past have been, from a standpoint financially, to have all the garbage trucks with the required employees, sanitation workers going around their routes, whether or not the bin was full or not, was looked at as being wasteful. And then for a time, we saw that there was no trash bins anywhere. And so to compromise, we need to get these higher tech trash bins in. And I think people like using them. I've used them. There's a few around Embarcadero Center here, and I see a few more popping up in other areas, and that's something that really needs to be put in so we don't have the trash on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the Embarcadero, sea level rise is a rising issue here. How do you plan to prepare San Francisco for the effects of climate change, such as sea level rise? Mm-hmm.
So I have been involved with several of the organization's community outreach from the port of San Francisco, and they explain the two main issues, not only the sea level rise, but the right now how the infrastructure along Embarcadero, the buildings, the and the piers are all so old that in the event, unlikely, but, you know, knock on wood, earthquakes, they're going to crumble, they're going to fail. And so there's a bond measure out there, which I support anything that we can do to ensure that the Embarcadero area is not going to crumble, or what we can do to shore up underground also. The structure is going to fail, and this is very problematic. And so we need to place emphasis on this, because in the event, whenever it's going to happen, that there's an earthquake, there's the potential that not only the ferry building and the tower, all those are going to get damaged or destroyed, but the BART and Muni tunnels are going to flood as well. Stranding, depending on what time of the day, and I don't want to sound doomsday-ish, but approximately 250,000 people are going to become stranded in the Financial District downtown area as a result of the failure of Embarcadero and the waterfront there.
How would you find money to pay for this?
Well, this is a bond measure. This is what they're talking
about. Oh, I see, right.
Yeah.
Also related to climate change, how would you make sure the city and its residents are prepared for future droughts?
Well, you know, we've seen now that there's been cycles of up and down where we've had a drought, and then we have tremendous rain. Then we have a little drought, then we have an average amount of rain. And so what is really problematic just in general is that it's not a constant drop all the way into a catastrophic drought. Mother Nature seems to pull at the last minute, and we're back out of a drought again. So we have already made quite a few changes as we've seen during the last more severe alert that we're heading into a massive drought. We've seen businesses and residents here have made changes to their habits. But I don't think we need to make a tremendous change at this point yet. One thing that is really disturbing, but I don't know how to fix this, is that whenever we do have a lot of rain, is that most of it, or nearly all of it, seems to just run off into the sea. So if we have a way of improving reservoir, some way that we can capture this rain, that will help us out tremendously with the storage, with cisterns, with the reservoirs. But you know, at this point, we don't have space for that. Mm-hmm. So we have to rely on having bigger reservoirs, or can we build more in other areas outside of the Bay Area or within the outskirts of Bay Area? Then, of course, we need to. And that's a regional effect, a regional issue. That's not something that us alone can deal with. And so as mayor, I'd want to convene a meeting of all regional heads to put in a plan, create a plan to increase the reservoir capacities.
And what kind of renewable energy infrastructure do you think San Francisco should invest in?
Well, we clearly already have a lot of effort with solar. Wind we could use. We're a fairly windy area. And wave. I've seen that in, like, I think it's in Seattle and other countries. They're doing wave technology to make generation from waves.
Would you aim to invest in these?
No, I'd need to research it more, but I've always been interested in alternative sources of energy.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Richie Greenberg. He's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. Let's turn to health. And there's a significant story in the news right now about the cleanup at the Hunters Point shipyard. Mm-hmm. An overwhelming percentage of soil samples taken on some parcels there by the company Tetra Tech were found to be falsified. Mm-hmm. And this is a former Superfund site because of toxins left by the Navy many decades ago. And it's a location where Lennar Corporation is building 12,000 housing units. They're also building on Treasure Island right now. As mayor, what do you plan to do about this scandal and concern at the shipyard?
Yeah, so I've actually just, this came to light, and I did a bit of research on this, and it's a horrible situation on so many levels, that those who are in the area living there, there's a few hundred, I believe, at this point.
Yeah, they're early right, on in the building.
300 or so. This is a tragedy, and those people, it's showing clearly a lack of accountability, lack of checks and balances, and it's a big problem because we had 12,000 units, I believe, were coming, were within this project, which are going to have to be put on hold. We cannot allow building on toxic land to continue. It puts everybody in a bad situation because we were counting on that building. And so we can't just go and turn our attention to a different part of the city. It took so long to identify an area and get the proposals and go through all the you know, what we need to do.
The city took control from the Navy in 2004.
Yeah, it's so slow. And I don't have the answer on that right now because it's just building takes so long in this city. And the building permits and the community meetings and everything that have to be done in order to get housing approved. But the thing that I am most concerned with, related to this but not directly, is that any projects that do come in the pipeline need to ensure that we don't push our families out. What does that mean? I don't like hearing a number of units. Like I said, 12,000 units. But I want to know specifically, are these one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom units? Because if everything that's going to go up is a micro unit, who's that going to serve? Who's that going to house? Just the single people, tech workers, for example. We don't need to have our emphasis on those. We need to be focusing on how do we keep our families here, and there have to be one, two, and three-bedroom apartments with parking.
And I know that that's one of your big platform points,
yes,
is to talk about providing affordable housing. Who would you hold accountable for what's going on at Hunter's Point?
Well, we've got the two players there. Lennar is a builder, right?
And then they were
contracting
with
contractor.
Tetra Tech.
So Tetra Tech, clearly, if they're falsifying it, they should be brought up on every charge that can be found, and they have to be absolutely accountable, whether it's civil or criminal, both.
Do you think that the city should continue working with these groups?
No. No. That goes along with my law and order. Absolutely not. Anyone that has screwed us over, who has stolen, lied, cheated, falsified documents, there's no reason that we should be working with them continually. No way. No. Mm-hmm.
And then on a more individual level, Healthy San Francisco mm-hmm. is a program that provides near universal health care for people living in the city. It's paid for by the city government, mm-hmm. and it's about $50 million in a recent fiscal year. Mm-hmm. That's supplemented by millions in payments required by businesses, and that's mm-hmm. where in restaurants you might see the
Healthy SF
surcharge.
Right. Right.
It covers some health care for individuals who make up to $54,000 a year, mm-hmm. and undocumented residents are eligible. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this program?
Well, from a consumer, right, from a consumer standpoint, going around with friends and family and my wife going out to eat, for the years that it has been implemented, and it's not implemented across the board. We go to some places, some restaurants, and you see it, and some we don't. And
they might not. They might not be just some restaurants state it openly, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. all are responsible for contributing.
Yeah, this was something that had a lot of us as a consumer, I'm saying, a little irked. But I completely understand where they're coming from. I understand the reason for it, but there have also been audits that show that there has been either purposeful abuse of it or mistake in that the amount of funds being taken in by the restaurant exceeded what their outlays were for their employees' healthcare needs. And so I think also because this was a percentage, the Healthy SF was a percentage of the bill of what your check is, the higher cost premium restaurants would automatically have a higher intake of what they're collecting, and so they're the ones that were subject to audit, and there was many accusations in the media and the newspapers of fraud here. So I support it to a point. I want to ensure that the public is not paying in more than what they really need to be paying. And your question about undocumented workers and those who are the beneficiaries who are eligible. So the undocumented workers to me falls into that whole gray area, and you could launch from that point, segue into Sanctuary City if you want. But hardworking individuals and what their specific circumstances and why they're here and paying taxes, law abiding, I don't really have a problem with them per se. That if you want to look at and go again into segueing into Sanctuary City, which a lot of people do ask me about, my focus would be much more on those who are the felons that are convicted in other countries that have moved to the United States, who have ran or fled justice in their country to come to a Sanctuary City / Sanctuary State to avoid justice on their end. So that's another topic, but well, it's a good segue.
Yeah, sure. So how much would you cooperate with the federal government in ICE agents who are seeking undocumented immigrants?
Right. So as I just said, I look at it as the two different categories.
Do you think that's consistent with the federal policy then?
In a sense, it is. In a sense, it is. And I fully support ICE. I do not support having either San Francisco or California being a sanctuary city / state. In the definition or how it has evolved, what those words and the situation has meant comes to mean today.
Yeah, because there is not a set definition of what sanctuary city or state is.
There was, I understand, years ago when it was first proposed, it was either to help those who were fleeing prosecution or persecution, either religiously or certain types of refugees. But it has evolved so much, in my opinion, to the negative today that it is being abused. And so, again, separating the two, those who are in that area, that gray area, that, okay, we understand that you're here without permission, you've either overstayed a visa or you came across the border, versus those who are, as I said a few moments ago, those who are convicted felons and have left their country to come here and flee, to come here to avoid and be. Because besides sanctuary city concept of harboring or allowing someone who's a fugitive to live here, you also can contribute in this kind of in this aspect, encouraging human trafficking or drug trafficking, because those that are across the border can take advantage of this and just, you know, ship people up here, or the human traffickers and drug traffickers, and
so just
and
to
just
clarify,
way, yeah.
It seems that your philosophy on this is more aligned with the federal philosophy on this as compared with the current San Francisco philosophy.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And so we're one of the few cities that designates resources and public defenders towards legal aid for undocumented immigrants. Would you plan to change how funds or personnel are directed?
Yes, I would.
In what way?
Well, this is interesting because from a standpoint of what Sanctuary City is, what immigration issues are. These are personal issues, like getting divorced, okay? And San Francisco nor the state have any jurisdiction to be enforcing federal laws in terms of immigration. So San Francisco does not issue passports, does not issue visas, does not make adjustments to immigration status. And so therefore, we should not be taking on any role that would be not our jurisdiction to begin with. And so we should not be using public funds, taxpayers' funds, to be one way or another dealing with an issue that is not our jurisdiction.
So that would apply both to, say, cooperating with ICE agents, having our law enforcement cooperating with them and what they want, as well as on the other side, public defenders.
Working. No, not correct. Hmm. I have read many of the memorandums of understanding, the operations of how cooperation between local jurisdictions, the San Francisco Police Department and other agencies, with the federal or state, how it's supposed to work, who's supposed to be paying for that, the cooperation, communications, coordination, and a lot of that is misunderstood by San Franciscans, by leaders in City Hall, by other activists. And so what you had said is not correct. We do need to cooperate and coordinate with the federal government, but not going after those families and children who are simply undocumented. I'm talking about focusing on those fugitive aliens. That's something different. And then I do not want to continue funding any of the lawyers' specialty departments that are defending those who have been arrested by ICE. I do not want to be funding that either, because that is using public funds, taxpayers' money, to fund something that is not our jurisdiction.
The line that you're drawing seems like it's not so black and white in reality.
The world is not black and white. Life is not black and white. And that's one of the problems that I aim to change here as mayor, is that we are so polarized. The society here is so polarized in this, just overall on so many issues, that everything has to be black and white, yes or no, left or right, on or off. And that is not how life really is. We need to be open to compromise. We need to be open to the gray areas in between, in the middle, because that's where the majority of people actually are. All the hotheads on both ends are the ones that are causing the most problems. They're the ones who are yelling the most on a variety of issues.
But it seems like when it comes to undocumented immigration, you are drawing a black and white line. But how would you tell who is
a family? I separate.
Because I'm sure advocates would argue, right, saying, well, this person is a family person.
ICE often will come in an action with a list of those who are that need to be arrested on extradition from other countries. So I support that. I definitely support that.
Okay. We're speaking with Richie Greenberg. He's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco.
Thank you.
Well, let's turn to economy. A study by Intuit, which makes the program TurboTax, that's how I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, I just used them a couple of weeks ago.
Me too. The company found about 34% of Americans are independent contractors. Mm-hmm. That means, among other things, they don't receive benefits. Mm-hmm. The number is trending upward. What do you think about this kind of employment?
So, I haven't read that specific statistics, and I'm dealing with San Francisco here, not, you said, nationwide.
That's
right?
Nationwide. Well, let's just say,
right,
there's
so,
a lot of independent contractors.
Oh, yes, there are.
And there's a lot more.
And
than
so,
there
interestingly,
were.
What was the cause of that? Well, I think we know it was the rideshare, ride-hailing services. I don't know if we can say the names on air or not, but
sure,
Uber and Lyft. Okay, so the whole gig economy. And and this has always been problematic in my mind. We see the trend in different jurisdictions, different states, different cities, where you have Uber drivers and Lyft drivers trying to first unionize or to sue to be classified as not an independent contractor but as an employee, which. There are tests, specific checklists and tests that the IRS puts out, and if a person in question or a company or independent, if they meet the majority of the tests in this checklist, then they're considered to be an independent contractor, or they're considered to be an employee.
And there was a recent state Supreme Court ruling on this as well, as an ABC check.
Yeah, yes. There's a bit of criteria here and leeway. But I truly believe that most of these gig economy workers should be considered workers, not independent contractors. And so that would mean that they would be subject to, what have you, the whole myriad benefits, unemployment, and then not have the onus on them to have to claim that income on as a sole proprietorship.
So would you enforce that of these companies, Uber and Lyft?
Well, I would like to. The reason is that for so long, and I take Uber and Lyft all around the city, and I think that they've been abusive. The companies have been abusive of their workers, because if it weren't for the drivers, they wouldn't exist. And so,
why do you take it then?
Why do I take it?
Yeah,
I'm supporting them at least, and I give them a tip. Mm-hmm. See, because Muni. Now we're going to another whole segue subject. If you want to,
so just to
come to this come to this studio here today. There's no way I could have gotten here from Muni easily.
Yeah,
it's where I was.
That's true. Uber and Lyft are definitely convenient. So I think that if you do try to enforce regulations that aren't being enforced by other cities, then you run risk of making unpopular decisions about all the people who maybe like you take Uber and Lyft.
Well. You know, again, compromise, and that's where I'm going to bring to the city hall, and you know, I want to take a stand on this as well, that they should be compensated properly and classified properly as an employee.
So, as mayor, you would bring them into your office and talk with them about doing that?
Yes, I absolutely would. Absolutely would.
Mayor Lee was doing some work with ride-hailing companies to establish some different regulations, like loading locations, so there wasn't as much double parking. Mm-hmm. Would you plan to continue to set up that program and other regulations?
So, what I've experienced in using Uber and Lyft for so many years now, there are different circumstances, different needs around the city here. What may be an issue in the downtown or financial district parts of popular tourist areas where there's a lot of congestion, that to me would seem more reasonable to want to put in designated areas for pickup than, say, out where you and I live on the west side, where you don't have so much congestion and it's not as so much of as an issue.
Right, wider avenues, less traffic.
Exactly, and so, or more specific, more actual space, more area for a Uber or Lyft to pick up or drop off. I was recently in Las Vegas, and over there they have in the hotel area around the Strip. They have set up designated areas that Uber can pick up or drop off. And I found that interesting because that was the first time that I personally experienced that. Like, oh yeah, Uber, you have to go to this area set up over here. You can't just expect it to come to the front door of the hotel, for example.
So you'd continue that work to bring that to San Francisco?
In certain areas, yes. Like along, you know, popular, like Valencia in the Mission, you know, and other
areas
downtown.
Where there are bike lanes, too.
Exactly. And so for me, again, back to the idea of compromise, we have a lot of hotheads issues on views on both sides of this, and we absolutely need to have a compromise with this. And I'm willing to push back at anyone that says they don't want to even hear about it.
Well, speaking of hot, you seem to get a little fired up about the idea of Muni. So I'm wondering, how would you look to reform? How would you look to reform public transportation?
Okay. So in my 17 years experience living here in San Francisco, and also over the past 20 years, I've experienced, I've lost count of dozens of trips that I've been to Europe and to Tokyo and Singapore. And I've ridden public transportation in Bulgaria and in Israel and all over the place. I come back here and I say, well, first of all, in general, in the areas that Muni serves, it's not that bad. I do give one thumb up. All right, we can get around, but it just doesn't serve every area, every part of the city. So, well, first of all, this is why Uber and Lyft exist, to make up the areas that it doesn't serve well. But I think that going on these big, grandiose projects, like what they're going to, they propose for Geary Boulevard, to make it a bus,
transit.
BRT, yes, is an abomination of a proposal. And this can be applied everywhere else, the rest of the city, that we don't need to have these tremendous grand projects. All we need to do is tweak the service times, add longer buses, the double length, to make sure that during peak times, we don't have single buses that are out there when we have clearly a need for more buses or capacity, and explore parallel routes. Now, out in the Richmond, we do not have a light rail. We don't have the Muni cards there. Now, in the Sunset, you do, but in the Richmond, we don't. So we rely entirely on either a car, Uber, Lyft, Chariot at times, or Muni bus. And so Geary carries the brunt of the passengers in the morning and then in the afternoon coming home from commute. But we have the 5 Fulton, the 1 California, the 2 Clement to some extent, and the 31 Balboa.
Roughly parallel.
Yeah, and some of them are just a block or two away. And so they parallel each other pretty closely until you get to downtown, then they split a little bit. But any of those will take you downtown within a few blocks of the final terminus down in the financial district area around Embarcadero or so.
So you want to see that more in other parts of the city?
Add more, well, for Richmond, for example, add more buses more frequently in need and take the pressure off of the 31 Geary. You don't need to have this big BRT project that's going to absolutely destroy the small businesses on Geary.
So are you saying, and we actually have reported about the ways in which a bus rapid transit project in East Oakland has affected businesses there.
Yes.
Though I think that others would argue that the end justifies the means and how you get there. And there is compensation for some of these businesses there.
Some, and it doesn't seem to be happening. And right now there are already a big percentage of storefront businesses, cafes, and retail all on Geary are suffering for other reasons.
Well, it sounds to me like you would basically take the money that the city was putting towards those projects, such as BRT on Geary or BRT on Van Ness, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a mess.
And then you would reallocate that into more bus lines or longer buses.
More
and
bus lines.
Infrastructure.
Exactly. Bus infrastructure, more buses, more modernize the fleet, which we do see is happening now. Modernize the dispatch and all the equipment and software that is running, that's the timing. Needs to be tweaked as well.
And would you create a charge for all vehicles entering San Francisco as a way to reduce traffic?
I actually saw that questionnaire to me, a mayoral questionnaire a month or so ago. I don't
so
really
have... So
you
had a chance to think about it?
I had a chance to think about it, and I'm still thinking about it. I don't have a yes or no answer on that because I just simply don't like adding taxes onto things and surcharges. It makes us living here in the city, it just makes life more expensive. And so you hear all the time about how people are complaining how expensive it is here. And
it generates revenue for services.
Yes and no. A lot of times it's more on that tax and spend mentality, which I don't really agree with either. There are ways to increase efficiency by doing audits and seeing where are we unnecessarily spending money. You know,
we're speaking with Richie Greenberg. He's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. We're going to turn to another one of your, as we spoke of before, one of your major platform issues, and this is housing and also homelessness.
Right.
What do you think would be the best way to address San Francisco's housing affordability crisis?
So this is one of those situations that you can't just build your way out of it for a few reasons. First of all, as we have seen, building, just the whole air quotes building, takes a while. We can't just find a location, locate a suitable place and just build tomorrow. It has to go through years of the planning and permits and proposals and public hearings and objections and modifications and
maybe more in San Francisco than elsewhere.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That was that by design? We don't know, but this is a problem. So just simply saying that we're going to build. We can't. Besides the fact that we don't have that much space here, we're almost landlocked. We're busting at the seams. The idea of increasing density sounds interesting, but it has to be very much in a respectable manner to coincide with the character of the neighborhood. So as we have all learned and seen over the past few months, neighborhoods have been in uproar, especially on the west side where we live. This Scott Wiener abomination of SB 827.
His idea that the state could determine the ways in which cities set their zoning requirements.
Right, that's one part of it. Yes, yeah, so local control would be lost, which I don't think any San Franciscan is happy about that.
Though people who are outside of San Francisco might be like, hey, all right.
Right, but they're not living here. and so some would say, well, who has the right to decide what we should do here in San Francisco? And I agree with that, that only we really know what our needs are or should be.
But so you're talking about things that shouldn't happen.
Right.
But so
what
should
happen is that we should not go along with SB 827 and bulldoze the whole west side and put up randomly placed...
taller buildings.
Taller buildings. That's no good. But what we should do, which I do agree with, is responsibly build, look at those... Along Geary Boulevard again. I know I'm going back to Geary because I am the only candidate that's running for election now that lives on the west side.
But the current the interim mayor, lives out
yes.
there too, right?
Yeah, he's in Pack Heights, I think, right there. But yeah, as far as candidates, I'm the only one that's on the west side, so I see things from a slightly different perspective. But, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of residents. San Franciscans live on our side.
But so on Geary, you
so
think
along
that...
Geary and other areas that are in the Sunset, possibly along 19th Avenue also, going south, right?
You think that we should change zoning requirements along those?
Well, there are already requirements, but opening
Katie Tang, a supervisor, and Mayor Lee both pushed for.
Yes, what you have is the bonus density. So that way, if you have a particular identified location that was an older building, an older structure that was a single-story commercial building that is older, right? That can be torn down, and in place of it, you could build, depending on how many low-income units you were putting, proposing, what percentage, the trade-off from the city would be to the builder. You can go higher then. Mm-hmm. And so I do accept that. I do like that idea, but to a maximum, of course. And
I think the maximum was 7 stories in those zones.
Yeah, I think it go higher.
For 100%.
Yeah,
100%. For 100% affordable
right.
housing.
Exactly. But still, you know, reality, that's not going to solve the housing crisis because, A, it's going to take a long time to build them, years to get them put in the pipe first and built. And B, you're not building thousands of units. It's going to be, you know, a dozen, 24, 30 apartment units are put up. If you can get them in a few blocks, that's not going to ease the housing crisis.
So what else would you do?
So, but then, and I've spoken about this before, is do we even need to be agreeing to house every single person that wants to live in San Francisco? Anyone that wants to move into our city and comes knocking on our door to demand affordable place to live, well, we simply, realistically, we can't do that right now. We simply can't do it. And so it needs to be more of a regional approach in that you have the surrounding counties, and they will step up, or they should step up to the plate and build affordable in those neighborhoods, those cities, and then commute in. Well, we don't like that idea. We don't like commuting in, right? Because how are they going to, you know, it's going to tax the BART system, add to traffic. Well, I'm one of the earlier adopters of the internet. I have a domain name that goes all the way back to 1996. And when that first, this whole idea of the internet came about and the improvements in technology, we had this thing called telecommuting. And people would work remotely. But it just doesn't, it's kind of fell by the wayside. And there's so many companies here that are in San Francisco that their employees should be telecommuting.
I mean, to be fair,
outside.
I'm sure that there are a lot of people who do.
I know that. But why do we have this whole phenomenon now where everyone is blaming the tech industry and tech companies for their employees moving here to San Francisco and taking away housing from those who should be housed, and again, I'm using the air quotes, should be housed here, and driving the rents up? Well, they're not telecommuting.
And I was picturing, as you were talking about this, I was picturing Brisbane when you mentioned neighboring towns, like Brisbane, Daly City.
Yeah,
you
south, would have south, yeah.
maybe more conversations with them or the Association of Bay Area Governments about this regional plan.
Yeah, there and up in Marin and over to East Bay and even further south in Brisbane.
Marin is pretty territorial.
No kidding. I learned that the first thing when I moved here 17 years ago. Wow, they are it's like
no
a wall.
Bart, no Bart,
no
in Marin.
Bart, no, no, no.
Well, let's turn to homelessness then. Okay. What would your plan look like to handle people living without homes in San Francisco?
Well, did you happen to look at my website? Because I have a very detailed emergency plan.
I did. I don't know if our listeners have yet.
So if you go to my website at www.richiegreenberg.org, you will see very prominently a in my opinion, a very professional video. It was an interview that I talked about my emergency plan on homelessness. Now, besides those who are homeless, well, first of all, we have to look at how you categorize homeless. That within many of the homeless counts, we see those who are simply living on a friend or relative's couch, or even in a spare bedroom, they're just not on a lease. It's not their home, it's someone else's home, but they are housed, they are warm, they are healthy, dry, fed, and even working. So those are the absolute lowest priority in my mind, because they're not living on the streets. To me—
Not chronically homeless people.
Or, yeah, chronically homeless also. Well, you could still have someone living on the streets that's not chronic, that has been living on the streets for years, someone newly homeless. But so separating those is very important, and where the resources and attention needs to be focused on, those who are the chronically and those who are living on the streets. And so in my video, I allude to a three-phase plan of attack. Okay, so first of all, whatever it is that we can do, what I want to do is ensure that we as a city do not continue to entice those who are homeless in a different city or state to move here and live here homeless on the streets.
Because of services that are provided by the city.
Because of the services. There are many articles that have been written in the past year or so where reporters have interviewed homeless individuals on the street, and they say, well, oh, we're from Brooklyn, we're from New York, we're from New Orleans and other cities, and even not so far flung, that are in Reno or in other areas within Northern California, for example, who said, oh yeah, I want to go to San Francisco to live because I hear that's where all the money is. Well, there's money. It's not for them, but there's money, and they come here and they're homeless. They were homeless before and they're homeless here.
Do you think those examples make up a lot of the people who are homeless on the streets?
So the studies show that of the approximate 7,500 homeless in San Francisco, 30% are not from here. They moved here from somewhere else.
Because they're looking for money?
Oh, they're looking for a more, well, not money thrown at them, like the streets are not paved in gold's idea, but they would move here to in hopes of now getting housing. But we already have those who are here. We have a line.
Getting housing through the city.
Through the city, exactly. That they have listened to some false narrative in whatever city or state that they were homeless there, that they should come here because then they can, you know, pick themselves up. And so what I propose, what I want to do, is to first convene a meeting of the Bay Area or you know, we have to identify where are most of these who are new arrivals, where are they coming from? And why are those cities and counties shirking their responsibilities to their own people and having them come here? Why are they doing that? Do they lack the resources? Do they not know either the finance, the money, or understanding of what they need to do? And we shouldn't be a dumping ground. And I really don't like using that word because we're talking about because we're talking about people here. But this is almost what it seems like. You have other jurisdictions that don't want to deal with their own people.
So you think that San Francisco is doing more than
our share.
Yeah, more than it's our share.
Absolutely.
And therefore, other cities
absolutely
are doing
yes.
less.
Because absolutely they can. Yes. Absolutely yes. Mm-hmm. And that trend needs to be turned around.
And so people who are currently living on the streets, I believe that I read that
yes,
you.
Yes. So that's number one, is to curtail those who are homeless elsewhere from moving here. That's number one. Number two is the more bold, aggressive plan, and that's to address those who are right now sleeping on the street, currently, right now. And that was where I would declare a state of emergency within days of me being sworn in. And just what you would see after a natural disaster, a hurricane or earthquake, is get these FEMA-style trailers. And there are a few areas around the city here that we could set up 100 of those or more, and they would hold two or three bedroom trailer, mobile home trailers, and we could put the those who are homeless on the street here safely into these FEMA style trailers, like around Candlestick Point and other areas, and set up a safe center. A navigation center is a similar concept, but that takes a while to set up. This can be set up in a matter of days.
They're kind of located in such a way, if I'm following the navigation center example, where there are services provided more easily because it's a localized
spot. So in that one area, you would have a few dedicated trailers that would be for food, for personal storage, so that that way, because we have the tent law here, where we can't move anyone off the street that's in a tent unless we have a place for them to have their personal effects stored. So there you go. We have storage, addiction specialists, and any medical specialists on hand, and then job counseling and. We have a program here that we've had for years that are homeward bound, is those who have moved here. Can we locate a friend or a loved one, relative, that the individual can be sent back to, so that way they can...
They get like a one-way bus ticket.
Exactly. So a lot of the homeless came here on a one-way bus ticket, so we're going to arrange for them to go back. And that's been around for years, so we want to expand on that as well. All within one safe... emergency temporary setup with security, so that way no one's coming in with any weapons or illicit drugs.
So there's room. I haven't been to Candlestick Point lately, but I'm picturing
yes.
a parking lot, essentially, yeah. with lots of FEMA trailers is what you would set up.
Mm-hmm.
And elsewhere yes. in the city as well? Because parking's an issue.
Exactly. Parking is an issue. So there aren't that many areas that this would work in. And so that is one that I'm looking at now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Richie Greenberg. He's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. The final topic area that I want to focus on before getting into kind of rapid fire questions is justice.
Justice.
What kind of training do you think police officers should have to work with diverse populations?
The best possible. I am a very staunch supporter of the San Francisco Police Department. I have actually gone through both NERT, which is the Neighborhood Emergency Response Team that's under the fire department. Are you familiar with this?
I've done that too.
You have? Okay, so we're both NERTs. And so then there's another program that builds on the NERT training called ALERT. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm not as familiar with that. Neighborhood emergency response training is to help people become first responders when first responders aren't available, not to
right.
administer medical care, but to
right.
make sure that zones are safe.
And that and whenever there's a disaster, fire, earthquake, to work in teams with light search and rescue as well.
Right.
And to triage those who are injured or unfortunately have been victims. And so, yeah, we both have gone through that training. Then there's ALERT, which stands for Auxiliary Law Enforcement Response Team. And that's under the SFPD. And I have done that as well. So I've done NERT and ALERT. You have to be fingerprinted Department of Justice, federal and state, to go through that program, which I have. And so I am also... under the auspices of the police department too. I don't carry a gun. I don't have arrest authority. But I support the police department. We are in a very dire situation right now where the number of active officers in the field are way below what we need in order to take care of the and serve the population level that we're at right now.
And so those numbers are about 1,900 in the
1971
city?
Is what was agreed upon back in 1996, 22 years ago.
Mandated
from 22 years ago. And with the increase of population and with the split off of the assigned number of officers between San Francisco proper and those that are at SFO, because you need to have SFPD down there as well, those officers, about 250 or so, are included in the current mandated number, but those officers cannot come and respond to a crisis here in the city. A few months ago, we had that UPS warehouse shooting. They were not that far away. They could have come up, the police officers in SFO could have come up the freeway, but they had to stay at SFO to protect SFO. And so 1971, I believe, have never even reached that mandated amount. Then you have the 250 down in SFO that aren't there. Then you have attrition, people, officers who leave, those who retire, those who are moved, that we're hundreds below. We need to bring it actually up to about 2,200 to 2,300. And so what I need as mayor is to absolutely enforce and bang my hand on the tables and yell, we need to get funding. We need to increase the number of police academy classes. And moreover, to take the stress off, though, I talk to police officers out there all the time, that the patrol cars themselves are in disrepair and there's not enough. And their laptops and other technology in the police cars, the patrol cars, is in disrepair or outdated. And not that many people seem to be talking about that, except one or two that I know. And I believe also Marty Halloran, the Police Officers Association president, he also was talking about this as well.
So police officers have to deal with many diverse populations and lots,
yes,
of different situations that often police officers historically have not dealt so well with. And
right,
there is also a history and a recent history of racism, or alleged,
yes,
racism too, in the police department.
Very, so very unfortunate.
You say
very
that you would want to see the best training.
The best training, sensitivity training, community police, so that way. But we already do see this, where you have racial or ethnic officers in certain areas. And this is how I grew up. I grew up in New York, in Long Island, you know. And so the police officer was both respected and sort of your friend. But that's not what we see here in many parts of the city. But there is a split. You do see here in San Francisco, on one side, the police officers and the police department are respected and supported. And on the other half of the city, you see vilified.
That's often along racial lines.
Yes, exactly. And so that's where my focus would be, that along the racial lines in those areas, those neighborhoods that have the historic either conflict or animosity, I want to ensure that we do everything we can to address those issues and rectify them in the most respected way.
And what do you think about the use of tasers in policing? This is actually a ballot measure.
It's a ballot measure. I don't think anything about it. They are coming. The tasers, they absolutely should have been here for years. That I firmly believe that San Francisco does not know better than the rest of the country in terms of implementing having a taser. The actual taser itself is no different here in San Francisco, what's going to be used, than you'd see in other cities and jurisdictions and states. And that
including some
have,
of the dangers that go along with tasers.
Well, the statistics show that with the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of actual uses over the years in different police departments, that the very, very, very small percentage of where there have been adverse effects or even death, that it is almost always a result of the individual, the person that was hit with the taser, already had a lethal or near lethal combination of a variety of drugs in their system at that time.
That being a reality, though, that a lot of people who end up committing crimes or being chased by police will have that,
right.
Is that the best tool to use?
It is the best tool to use because what are the options? To draw a gun. And whenever a gun is drawn and a bullet fired, it's rarely a good outcome. It's not just for the option of having a taser versus a gun. It just makes sense for the suspect themselves, for any innocent bystanders in the area, any hostage or someone that's also in the situation, and the police officer themselves. When a bullet is discharged, the chances of it hitting multiple people or the wrong person or ricocheting versus a taser, you see. So I firmly believe that over the past few years with all these tragic deaths that we've heard at the hands of the unfortunate situations probably wouldn't have happened if a taser was used.
We're speaking with Richie Greenberg. He's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. So we're going to conclude with a lightning round.
Okay.
And so what that means is I'd like you to try to give one word answers couple words or at most a sentence for a bunch of questions here.
Yeah.
Ready?
Boxer or brief? Brief. Okay.
Legalized adult use recreational marijuana.
It's already law. So, yes, but it has to be in
good or bad.
Good or bad. I am fearful of both public safety, what's going to happen with DUI and such as driving while high. And also, I don't like having pot dispensaries and retail storefronts in neighborhoods where children and schools are.
Okay. I think that's sort of a sentence.
It is.
Of a run.
Yeah.
That's good. Charter schools versus conventional schools.
Charter schools and conventional schools, both.
The Golden State Warriors coming to San Francisco.
It's fine. They were here before, weren't they?
It's true. The Central Subway.
Get it finished already, put it into service, and move on.
How mid-Market Street changed during the Lee administration?
Good and bad. It cleaned it up, but But because of the Twitter tax, that's coming to an end next year also. So we're going to see what's going to happen once that's taken away.
Electric scooters.
Looks like a lot of fun. I haven't been on one yet, but I don't like them littering the sidewalk. So we have to come up with a compromise and figure out how to allow them to stay here.
Being a Republican in San Francisco.
Absolutely awesome. I'm loving it. The conservative faction and voter bloc is coming alive. I didn't realize that I'm now becoming the face of Republicanism in this city.
Well, you're the only Republican mayor.
Exactly. We've come alive, and I urge everyone who is even right-leaning to vote.
Donald Trump.
So, he was a great talk show or reality show leader. There are many people in the Republican Party that like him still and those that don't like him.
How about you?
I like him and don't like him. That I would hope, and I think a lot of people hoped, that when he was finally elected that he would change a little bit. He hasn't. Some people still like that. I don't like the brashness as much. I think, though, that a lot of what he's done for the country so far, other than trigger a lot of people on the left, that if you just look at his what's actually happened with the economy and taking a stand, that is good. And if... You know, to be fair, if this was a different person in, that everyone else would cheer. But just because it was him, this is where he's getting the bad rap.
So let's keep the lightning round questions.
I'm trying, but these are questions that are hard to
get. Well, this one maybe you could keep short. What do you hate most about San Francisco?
Oh, boy. The dirtiness.
What do you love most about San Francisco?
The environment, the scenes, the vistas, and the natural beauty.
And what do you think needs to change about how San Francisco has been governed in the last few decades?
Accountability. And the Board of Supervisors has not been reined in because there's been no checks and balances between the mayorship and the... they're two different departments. They're two different branches. Executive is the mayor, and the Board of Supervisors is the legislative, but they've been acting as if they're the mayor, and they've been trying slowly to take away power from the mayor.